Welcome back to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Amar Hanspal. He's SVP of product at Autodesk, and he's a maker. This is Technotopia. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com. Welcome back to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Amar Hanspal. He is SVP of products at Autodesk. Autodesk is a 3D design company. Is that right? Or why don't you describe it to the listeners before we begin?
We are a 3D design software company. What we do is help people describe the physical world in the form of digital models in the computer so they can come up with better ideas. And, you know, at the end of the day, we'd like to, you know, people talk about WYSIWYG. We like to do WYSIWYM, which is what you see is what you make. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the software stack we produce for the world. And, you know, our customers range from makers all the way to large enterprises.
Okay. So what are some of the products that a maker would use that you guys have? I know there's AutoCAD, which is the top, and 3D Max and all that other good stuff.
Right. I think the products our maker would use is we have this product called Tinkercad. So if you're really the beginner in, you know, exploring the world of manufacturing, you'd start with something like Tinkercad. Really, for more serious people, we have a product called Fusion, which connects everything from form to fabrication. And we also have a product called Inventor. And then all the way up to the stack, you know, the car companies use products like Alias from us to do the styling. So we have a whole range of products for the manufacturing industry.
Okay, so I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of these things. I've used 123. I've used Tinkercad. My son uses Tinkercad in school.
Great. Okay.
What will it take to make us all capable manufacturers using these tools? Are these tools ready for prime time? Are these tools ready for the general populace? Because I remember opening up like AutoCAD and just being completely confused, I guess.
Right. No, I think, look, software's come a long way. And I think maybe, you know, the answer or the analog to your the question that you'd have is we envisage a world where it's as easy to make something as it is to desktop publish, a brochure. So it describes something, hit print, and it prints out exactly the way it looks on screen. And we'd like that to be true for, you know, you describe a 3D model, say make, and it comes out of a 3D printer. And I think the things that need to still improve is that the connection between your, you know, the software and the piece of hardware that's making, it still has a long way to go before manufacturing is as simple as something like, you know, the world of 2D printing is. So I think for everybody to be a maker, we can see our path to getting there, but there's still work to be done to simplify the connection between the software and hardware.
Okay, so let's picture my attic. I have to my left, I have a MakerBot, with PLA. I got a laser printer next to me, which is unusual. I have another 3D printer over here in the corner. There's a fresh MakerBot downstairs. There's rolls of PLA, just waiting to be made, and I haven't turned on the printer in about 4 months. So what needs to change? Even me as like some plugged in advanced man for the future, what needs to change in my life that I'm going to be using this printer every day to make everyday objects?
Right. So there's always the path where you need, you know, hopefully you'd get inspired with some brilliant new idea and that'll make you fire up a product to do these things. But, you know, I think the future that we're heading to, you're going to start to see manufacturers put components online. So the idea here is if a washer dryer breaks and you need a replacement part, instead of, you know, waiting for the manufacturer to mail you the replacement, you can get a temporary replacement by 3D printing something that is made available online by the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Things like toys, things like, you know, medical pieces, prosthetics, those are the kinds of things. So in short, I think for 3D printing to become a reality in every home, there's a bunch of content that needs to be made available that so people don't have to be designers to, you know, do 3D printing. On the other side, I think the connection, like we were talking about earlier, just the ability to print something on a MakerBot needs to get simpler, because today you have, there's about three steps involved to go from a 3D model to a MakerBot result. And even then you may get it right about half the time it would work. That whole thing needs to get better. So I think there's a two-sided thing, or, you know, equation that needs to work out. More content on one side, and the other side, you know, better reliability and a easier to use pipeline with like the hardware devices. So that's what Nirvana would look like.
So what will my desk look like in 20 years? I have a laser printer here which prints paper, and obviously paper is so banal at this point that I would like a 3D printing to be as banal as paper printing. But what would it take? What would it take for what sort of printer will I have next to me in 10 years?
You know, let's put on our imagination hats here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that, you know, there was a book a while back that sort of talked about I forget what it was called, but it's like you would put raw material. So you would imagine a printer the size of like a cube, right? Nothing much larger than a printing, like a laser jetter, like a mm-hmm. commercial large capacity laser jet. And you would have some kinds of cartridges that would have raw material made to like open standards. And these days there's lots of sort of material efforts that are about democratizing access to chemicals and things like that. And you'd have those cartridges plugged in, and that's all it should take, in a wireless connection between your mobile device or your Mac or PC over to the desktop, you know, 3D printer. So I think that's, I don't even think it's going to take 20 years. I'd actually think that within about 5 years, you'd have an experience like that.
So I could print I've printed a knob for our dishwasher downstairs, yeah. But I could print it in metal, or I could print it in plastic that looks injection molded, et cetera.
Exactly. Definitely plastic, strong plastic. I mean, you know, the thing with metal is you have to deal with high temperatures. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, you know, every home is going to have something like that. Because I think the other variation, John, on this is that you would dispatch your, if you need to do something in metal, you need some special capability, there's some special material, I think you'll have, not exactly Kinko's, but you'll have these kind of distributed factories that could do these things on demand for you. So you'd say, hey, you know, I want this thing printed and send it to me. And within 24 hours, you'd get your part if it was of a slightly more complex set of materials. So I think the world we're heading to, you're going to have these on-demand services as well as sort of local print capabilities. And I think that's going to be hugely empowering for companies and for people.
Do you ever see a world in which, except for a few major structural parts that maybe could come separate, could I print a car at home?
I think you print lots of parts of a car. I mean, I think, you know, we already have companies that are doing entire parts and then assembling them. I mean, I think there are obviously regulatory and safety kinds of things to get through. But yeah, I think you will have more and more. I mean, we're starting at the low end of the easy stuff, like we talked about toys and a few parts. And these things, just like everything else in technology, are just going to get more and more capable, more and more, handle more and more complexity. I mean, you look at 3D printers now, they're handling multi-materials. So you don't even have to make things of one material. You can mix things up. I think this stuff is going to get more and more capable. And I don't see why we couldn't start doing things like not just knobs on dishwashers, but entire, you know, you can customize the front of your dishwasher to your personal liking. Things like that, I think, are going to be very possible within a 5-year time frame.
So like a full, like a faceplate for a dishwasher. I mean, I feel like that's sort of that's as banal as the print, the paper printing. I think customization in that respect is probably not the right tree to bark up, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it's a good point there. I mean, really, the more meaningful things, I would look at medical applications. That's something that is where customization or personalization is actually important, right? You want, whether it's like a cast for a broken arm or, your Invisalign kind of attachment in your mouth guard or something like that, mm-hmm. for sports. Those are, really actually applications you could see being very practical, very useful, and very possible. So yeah, I mean, I think we could give up the dishwasher kind of examples for things like medical or, personalized gifts and jewelry, and those kinds of things in a 5-year time frame are going to definitely be possible.
Okay. So what does the manufacturing pipeline look like in 5-10 years?
I mean, hopefully it looks closer to what desktop publishing looks like, is that I think today, to go from an idea to something that you hold in your hand, it takes, probably for simple stuff, it takes 3 months. For more complex things that industrial companies make, it takes 2.5 years to do this. And it involves, 8, 9, 10 different tools. And I think the fact that this world is becoming, has become more digital, and that tools are becoming a lot more integrated, means like things, I would see that 3.5 month cycle for a personal application collapsing down to a couple of days, the 2.5 year cycle collapsing down to few months. And that it really looks a lot more, you look at the world of, go back to my desktop publishing analogy. There's the desktop publishing pipeline that someone would use at home to publish a, poster for school. And there's a desktop publishing pipeline that someone like New York Times uses to create their newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I think the manufacturing pipeline is going to look like that. There's going to be a pipeline that's very well suited with a couple of simple tools to say, make these easy and easy parts with a little bit of configuration available to people. And then there's a slightly more complex industrial manufacturing pipe that has a few more things in it, like electronics, like metal, like more simulation, but it all, it actually feels as simple and straightforward as you describe something and say publish to web or publish to the laser writer.
Okay, so the idea of that I could build I build myself an Arduino box, put it in a case. And then I say, look, these are all the pieces that I need. Can the machine simplify it, put it into the box properly,
and
essentially print me out a finished product.
Ready, finished product. I mean, the one other angle I think that's going to be really interesting in the next 3 to 4 years is how AI and machine learning is going to sort of come into this manufacturing pipeline. Because right now, you and I actually have to do a lot of the thinking or the engineering to make a new part or make a new idea come to life. I think over time, you're going to watch the computer start to learn from all the projects that go through it or learn from real world objects and start to do, you might even say, look, I need something that can carry, 30 pounds of weight and have these motion characteristics, and let the computer come up with the design for you. I think that's another thing in the manufacturing pipeline that's going to start showing up.
Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, I think that's a really interesting point. The idea that you're dealing with a known commodity. I have an Arduino board with a couple shields attached to it that can do different things. And I have a relay in there that controls a lot of power. If I could give it to an AI to say, make what I have here complete with the programming usable inside a case the size of an iPhone.
Exactly.
Presumably it could do that, because that's basically just a systemic or algorithmic sort of system that you could use.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. So yeah, that's the electronics example, and the same things apply to mechanical systems as well, because I think you could describe, hey, listen, I want to generate this much force on the other side of this, and the whole thing needs to weigh these many pounds, and I would like a handle on one side, and let the computer see if it can figure out given those outputs and inputs, whether it can design something for you. And you look at the design and say, I don't quite like the aesthetics of that. You can fix the aesthetics, or, you know, if it gives you three choices, pick one. I think those kinds of things are going to come in. And back to the idea of making things, when you're, you know, more understandable, how do you get more households doing 3D printing? These are the kinds of things that will make it simple so that you don't have to think like, oh man, I need an engineering degree to design something. Like, you know, you just say, okay, I need to solve this problem. Can you solve it for me? And the computer might be able to do that for the ordinary person.
Is there any work in evolutionary design? I guess I remember a couple years ago they would design antennae that were specifically, they were evolved to pick up the best signals, right?
Right. Well, there's two or three things going on, John. One is like, there are adaptive products, you know, products that have embedded software in them that, you know, Nest is an example of that, right? That sort of learns through the environment and starts to improve its results by, you know, watching what's happening in the environment. So that's sort of, you know, software and electronics that kind of improve products. So that's one. The other angle we're watching and certainly trying to pioneer is this idea of generative design, where you tell the software certain constraints and let an intelligent design algorithm come up with alternatives that you can choose from. And the ultimate idea is to combine both the first and second ideas, where you could put a bunch of sensors like on a like a test rig, if you will, get real world data and then input that data into an intelligent design system, and it comes up with the right solution for you. So this is the idea where you're taking generative design and applying AI based on real world data and coming up with, you know, solutions that are strong, that are light, that are manufacturable. So I think there's a nice path here for making products intelligently.
Okay. And are you guys working on any sort of products that can do that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have a project we call Dreamcatcher, which is one of these generative design systems. So we've been working with a couple of companies that are, you know, that are interested in working with us on solving this problem. I mean, these are early days, but it has some promise. So yeah, we've got an experimental project, if you will, called Dreamcatcher.
Okay. So do you have a private website, or should just people look for you at over at Autodesk?
I think on Autodesk.com we do have Dreamcatcher described. So it's something that is discoverable, and we have a couple of examples.
All right, sounds good.
That's sure how it works, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Amar. Thanks for joining us. I know you were at a manufacturing conference learning how to build the future anyway. So
exactly.
This is right up your alley. All right. Thanks for joining us. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.